This is Harry Hughes, member of Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska. This is a report of a trip to Dawson City for the Discovery Day of Gold in the Klondike area in the early days. And on this trip were Theo McKenna, Grand Secretary to the Grand Lodge of the Pioneers of Alaska. She's a member of Auxiliary 8 of the Pioneers of Alaska and Secretary to Auxiliary 8. Also in the car was Andrew Wicken, a member of Pioneers Igloo 4, and there was a Miss Karen Stampy, an 18-year-old girl that was raised in the Yukon area, and Kay Kennedy, of the News Miner, whom I've known for some 24 years, and there was a Mr. Stevens, the editor of Mining and Oil Journal at Vancouver, British Columbia. He went from Fairbanks with us on this party to Dawson City and left the party there and flew on down to Whitehorse and on to his home destination. Kay Kennedy, with the News Miner, took the tourist bus and come back to Fairbanks, and myself, Harry Hughes, Thea McKenna, and Andrew Wicken, and Karen Stampy come back to Fairbanks in my car from Dawson, which is about 430 miles. We left Dawson at 10 minutes of 5 in the morning. They put us across the river on the free ferry, and 21 miles out of Dawson City, we saw a large grizzly bear along the road and had a wonderful trip. And while we were in Dawson, we interviewed and visited many, many people. The Dawsonites were the most wonderful people that I ever met. I met some of the finest families that I've ever met. And one old-timer we met was known as Jerusalem Joe. His true name is Joe Canatus, K-N-A-T-O-U-S. He was born in Syria in 1873 and left Syria as a child in 1884. He arrived in San Francisco February 1885. Some intervening history was missing, and he arrived in Dawson in 1895, and he went from Dawson to Anchorage and arrived in Anchorage that same year, 1895. Some of his life, he mined in the Copper River in the vicinity of what is now, it would be the old Guggenheim mining district. And then he left and went to, he hiked from Juneau to Chitna in Alaska in 1895. Old Joe traveled alone most of the time. He walked from Juneau to Dawson City in 1896. In many of his travels, he traveled alone. Joe's memories skipped a few years, so please bear with us to carry on Joe's memories. Joe has mined where the power plant of Dawson City is at the present time, in the year of August 1960. He relinquished his property to the city and went to mine on Bonanza in the Dawson Territory. Among Joe's memories are the buildings of cabins with no nails, where they use ropes to tie the logs together. Another of Joe's memories, after the First World War, he visited his old home country to locate his family over in Syria. And the Turks in the First World War went in and destroyed his country and killed over 100 of his relations. His wife was caught over there during the war and was unable to return. And she was an American girl born in Zanesville, Ohio. His family had been visiting in Syria when the war broke out, and they were unable to return to America. Joe found three of his many relatives left after the mutilations of the enemy. In that World War condition. Joe has a brother in Brazil. Name of the town is unknown, has lost contact with his family through the many years. Joe has been a cook, an assistant cook for the Yukon Consolidated in later years of Dawson Territory. One of the most interesting facts about Joe is that he carried a compass for directions as he traveled alone around the world, in this new world, in the Dawson area and Alaska area. He also traveled from Summit Lake to Lake LaBarge and followed the Yukon and walked on the ice on his trips. And he wore a fur coat that weighed 33 pounds, and he used a 5-gallon oil can with a candle in it for light to travel by at night. Another of his memories was the development of a core drill for gold in the early days over there, and the boiler and pump for cold water thawing, which is now in use in parts of Canada and the rest of the world today. The difficulty of shutdowns, as Joe described at Unit 4 with the $1 million ground in Dawson, at that time it was a wooden dredge, number 12, was wooden tops with metal bottoms that were brought in from the American side or from Alaska. There's many other memorable things about Joe. He lives in a cabin located where the original cabins were built when Dawson was first discovered. And there are three cabins above his house intact today. There are many other buildings that date back from 1894 to 1901 located in the Dawson area. And present at the interview with Joe were Theo McKenna, Catherine Kaiser, known as Katie McLennan, and Andrew Wicken from Fairbanks, and myself, Harry Hughes, from Fairbanks. These are just some of the notes that we took on this trip. Thank you very much. This is Harry Hughes again, and I would like to tell some of the things that I seen when I arrived in the Dawson area this year of August 1960. One of the things I'd heard over 40 years ago from old pioneers that I met that come out, the Stampeders from the early days in Dawson, was the country wasn't like I thought it would be. It's Dawson's located on the Yukon River in a great valley. There's mining in the little canyons up each way, the Klondike River and Bonanza Creek and Hunker Creek. And I went on the top of the mountain and took a panorama picture with my moving picture camera. And the whole country was different than I had visualized it from some 40 to 45 years ago when I visited with old Captain A.J. Goddard, one of the early day pioneers that come over the Chilkoot Pass when they had the mammoth slide and many people and horses were buried. And there was thousands of people on the trail at that time. Old Captain Goddard has a collection of 4,000 glass lantern slides that were taken with $2 box cameras that him and his wife took in the early days. One of the feats that Captain Goddard related to me in his stories, and which he showed me about 400 of his slides when I used to visit with him years ago, was that he brought the first sawmill into the Lake LaBarge country in the Dawson area and set up the first sawmill to whipsaw lumber. And lumber was a dollar a foot, and it would cost anywhere from $200 to $300 to get enough lumber to build a boat to go across the lake and over into Dawson Territory. He also built the first steamship and set up the first steamship schedule on Lake LaBarge. He showed me the original sailing schedules and banners that he had posted, which he kept and preserved through the years. And he told me about the Telegraph Creek country and about the Cassiar country.
and his trip down on the Yukon, where they had terrible hard times in the winter. And then he told me about his trip into what is now known as Fairbanks area. It was known as Barnett's Cache. He was with the original party that come into Fairbanks, and Captain Barnett established the trading post and the landing place here. And Captain A.J. Goddard went on downriver to establish other points down on the Yukon and in the Koyukuk country and back in the Dawson country. Captain Goddard's collection of wonderful pictures of the early day gold rush into this country were willed to the Smithsonian Institution at Washington, D.C. on his death. When I knew him, he was paid to give lectures at the universities and colleges and back in the East. He received fees in the neighborhood of $500 to $1,000 in expenses for a single evening's lecture on the happenings in the history of Alaska. I thought this would be interesting for our record here. There may be some alive today that knew him and some of his history. I met a one man here in town that used to travel here for years, a man by the name of Dan Noonan. Dan worked on the riverboats here, which we have a tape recording for the Pioneers from Dan. And he knew Captain A.J. Goddard personally. He knew Captain Burnett personally. And he verified some of the things that I'd heard many years before. I'll stop this a moment. During golden days at Fairbanks, Alaska, on July the 22nd, 1960, I met the Dawson party of some 40 people that visited Fairbanks for our golden days. And one of those members was Mr. Butterworth, a merchant in Dawson. He'd been there approximately 25 years, and he stayed with me here at Fairbanks, and the other members of the party were taken care of in different homes and hotels here in town, and we tried to show them a good time in their visit over here. And when we decided to go to Dawson, why, I had promised to stop with him and his wife, and of course Andrew Wicken and myself stopped with Mr. Butterworth. And another thing we learned while we were there, that there's no newspaper today printed in Dawson. There is a little local paper being printed twice a month. Each week, the women of Dawson, some 10 or 12 of them, get together and make up a little bunch of notes and print up a little mimeograph paper that's known as the Klondike Corner. I'm reading from an edition of August 11, 1960. This is the 161st printing of this at Dawson City, Yukon Territory. There's many local notes and happenings around there. One item says, the Klondike Visitors Association sponsored a trip to Fairbanks for 20 members of the association to take part in the Golden Day celebration at Fairbanks. Kate McLennan, Mike Wingle, Teddy Watch went as guests to the Dawson organization. The party, all in costume of the days of 98, met at the airport by the Pioneers of Alaska at Fairbanks, also in costume. A complete program of entertainment was arranged for the visitors, and everyone had a most enjoyable time. Besides contributing to the effect of Dawson publicity stunt, a letter from the Pioneers Ladies Auxiliary of Fairbanks told us how much Fairbanks enjoyed having the Dawson group, and also commented upon the steaming and good sportsmanship of Joe Henderson and Millie Westberg, who drenched in the parade during the time of a rainstorm. They stayed on the float, holding on to an American flag. Fred Cook and family drove over to the celebration. A few miles from Fairbanks, Fred realized the highway patrol was on his trail and really wondered what was up. When the patrol car used the siren to have him pull over to the side of the road. The officers congratulated Fred after bringing him out of a state of shock and told him he was the recipient of a good driver award, which entitled him to lodgings, meals, tours, and magazine subscriptions. And the paper here says, "Nice going, Fred." That is some of the information that the ladies get together every other week to publish the alternate week edition of this Klondike Corner. I thought this might be of interest on this tape for record two. This is Harry Hughes, Igloo 4, Fairbanks, Alaska. August the 29th, 1960. This is Harry Hughes. I was called to the home of Mrs. Fred Sorey in the morning by Mrs. Thea McKenna. Mrs. Sorey turned over to me about 200 pictures that Mr. Fred Sorey had taken of current members of Pioneer Igloo 4, together with the negatives, to preserve for the pioneers of Igloo 4, as Fred had planned to make available for the historical record of the members pictured during the year of 1959 to 1960. Fred being in an incapacitated condition and very sick in the hospital, Mrs. Sorey had to make arrangements to go out to be with Fred. The negatives could be used to make reprints for members and their relatives or friends, if they so wished. The profit of these reprints would be given to Mrs. Sorey as a donation to help recover some of the money, many hours of Fred Sorey's work in getting them together. As a suggestion, I would like to have an expression from the Igloo how this would like to be handled, or maybe they would like to appoint somebody to do it. This is Harry Hughes.